What's the wildest place you've seen people put whipped cream that you didn't think it would work, but it worked?
We hear about all sorts of places where our whipped cream has gone that we did not expect. But I suppose with this type of food, it can be very daytime or it can be very X-rated. We really launched, we started our work mainly during COVID. And at that time, you know, really we didn't know, would we ever get back into a coffee house for a while? So we wanted to bring that experience to retail and to grocery so people could do it on their own.
What got you into making whipped cream?
You know, Lori and I always believe that an idea comes from a passion and also an insight.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Duck Pond Podcast. Today, we have a very special guest. She is a food scientist with a PhD, a veteran of the food and beverage world, and the co-founder of the whipped cream brand that's turning heads in grocery aisles across America. Along with her sister Lori, she created Whipnotic, a low-sugar, low-calorie whipped cream with a patented swirl nozzle that injects flavor and color in every single spray. Now, it's in over 1,500 stores from Whole Foods to Target and has won major awards like Grow NY for innovation. Today, we're talking about breaking into a 100-year-old category, building a viral brand, and what it takes to turn an idea into a patent. Welcome to the show.
Hi, it's Tracy, and nice to be here.
Super excited to have you. You're our second episode, and like I said before we started this recording, I found you on an aisle, and it just popped out. Like, it was great branding, great development, and it really begs the question, like, what got you into making whipped cream? Like this, like I never really thought about innovation in this category.
Yeah, you're not alone. If you could count the number of people who've had a conversation about whipped cream for more than 2 minutes on one hand, probably. But you know, Lori and I always believe that an idea comes from a passion and also an insight. And so the passion really started with my sister. She loved whipped cream as a child. She was the one who would pile it high on top of her pancakes and her waffles and basically, you know, order whatever was the vessel for whipped cream.
Right.
I think as we grew up, we realized that every single part of the grocery store had been updated, modernized, ingredients had evolved, packaging had evolved, but whipped cream stayed pretty much exactly the same as what we remembered as kids. And I had worked for a number of years in the dairy industry, and we talked about every category, but whipped cream never was brought up.
Right.
We just realized this is a category that's ripe for innovation. And then we started to look around at baristas and what they were doing in coffee houses all throughout New York City. And we saw them swirling all of these syrups into whipped cream, making them much more colorful and flavorful. And we loved that multi-sensory play. And that's what we decided we could really bring uniquely to the category.
People were kind of whipping their own version up. Manually.
They weren't necessarily whipping their own versions up. That behavior is really small, but more, you know, the baristas were taking sugary syrups and adding them in a swirl pattern on top of the whipped cream.
Got it.
In order to create, you know, seasonal items or very unique menu items. And we really launched, we started our work mainly during COVID. And at that time, you know, really, we didn't know, would we ever get back into a coffee house for a while? So we wanted to bring that experience to retail and to grocery so people could do it on their own.
And when you and Lori were talking about Whipnotic in the beginning, was it the same as the version that we see today? Or how did it evolve over time?
It really was. And that's kind of the crazy part is everyone always told us what you start with is never what you end up with.
Right.
Our story certainly isn't written yet. But we are a product that looks nearly identical to our earliest prototypes. So we started by, during COVID, every office in New York City was pretty much closed. So our friends would sneak us in at night to be able to work on their 3D printers with a vacated office. And all of our earliest prototypes really look like what our nozzle looks like today.
And the nozzle is really the magic of Whipnotic, if I'm beyond the formulations. you know, how was the journey from the sketch on a piece of paper to the working prototype and then eventually making it? Can you walk me through that journey?
Yeah. Basically, we started actually by looking at that frozen yogurt nozzle that swirls two flavors together.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to figure out exactly what was creating that pattern and how that was working. And then, like I said, we kind of sketched things out with friends and then went into 3D printing and then got a partner who could help us with making prototypes. And then we started to scale up. But I promise you, we're not done. We're constantly touching this thing, improving it, making changes. So I think we'll be making changes forever. We always say it's like we're doing constant iOS updates.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the way it should be, right? Like, people love you for one idea, but they always want you to expand and upgrade. And I love that.
User testing goes on forever, right? So like, we learn constantly. For example, when Lori and I were first starting out, we're both, you know, females with relatively normal sized female hands. So the way that we would press the button, you know, when we were user testing all along the journey was certainly different than when the first, you know, male grabs the nozzle.
Or even a kid.
Press it.
I've seen kids playing with it.
Or my mother. Yeah, my mother. So it's just, it's so, we learn constantly because this is a really unusual food. People, you know, when you're in this industry, one of the first questions I get is, who's your demo? Who's your right. target demo? This is not a demo related category. We appeal to young people, we appeal to older people, we appeal to men, to women. So it's more about occasion than it is demo. And because of that, yeah, we need to keep user testing all different kinds of hands and make it simple, easy, and effective for every single hand strength and size.
It's really interesting that you brought up demo, because oftentimes, like you said, a lot of brands center their branding and their marketing around who their ideal customers are. And you know, your demo is so broad. It's honestly, anyone who loves to eat sweets can be a part of your customer. Have you found that to be more challenging or easier to market and brand?
Well, what's interesting for us is that we really, when we developed this product, we thought it could be an ice cream alternative. So, you know, rather than having a couple hundred calorie per bowl ice cream, we thought, okay, we have the texture, we have the sweetness, we have the flavor impact, but for a small fraction of the calories and fat of ice cream. So that's what we originally had thought about. But what we found is that the first purchase consumption is almost always for coffee. Wow. So it's that barista experience that we noticed early on, which is also driving people to pick up our product and purchase it for the first time. And then, of course, they find all these other occasions and things that they can do with whipped cream, which is that ice cream or, you know, something else sweet. But it's really like making that morning, I call it coffee, but it's really that morning beverage,
yeah.
Whether it's, you know, a tea or matcha or chai or something, kind of an iced coffee or something cool that you want to make yourself to like feel good on your way out to work or to school. And yeah, so that's really the unifying occasion. And is that more complicated? In the beginning, it was. And I'll tell you why. Is in the beginning, retailers had whipped cream next to Jell-O gelatins or Jell-O puddings or cookie doughs. So we were kind of an afterthought category that was just placed on the shelf next to kind of old stodgy categories in sense that weren't seeing much innovation. But over time, as we've developed, we've been seeing customers, both we influence, but also I'm sure others do as well, and the customer sees it for themselves. They've been putting us next to cold brews and next to creamers. And so that morning occasion of coffee and fun beverage is kind of an instantaneous, automatic thing. And that's made our targeting much easier.
That's amazing. I read this book back in high school about the story of Febreze. And when Febreze first came out, it was actually unscented. It was just a room spray. It helps remove odor. Didn't have any scent to it. Now there's lavender, there's vanilla, there's all that. And they said that they actually started adding scents to it because people just love having that as a part of the ritual to close off the cleaning routine. So when people clean their house, they want to have something that makes them feel like they completed it. So they spray the room, smell the Febreze, and be like, okay, the room is clean now. And adding that to the ritual has been a huge help to Febreze's market share. And I really think about the parallel that you're mentioning about how this whipped cream is usually an afterthought, but as people are adding this to their routine, they almost can't have it without your whipped cream anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, in school, one of my favorite areas of food science was called sensory science.
Right.
And this is such a specialized area within a specialty already, but something that really fascinated me because it combines science and psychology and nutrition and, like, you know, kind of the brain all in one science. And I think that there is just so much power. You know, brands often are very visual. And I think there's all of these layers of increased power and emotion that come from adding additional sensory factors on top. And part of the advantage of our product is that the nozzle itself is what houses all of the flavor. So, for example, in our strawberry swirl, the base of the whipped cream is just a plain vanilla whipped cream, but inside the red button on the nozzle is where we place all of the strawberry juice. Oh. And so that's what swirls into the whipped cream when you press the button and you spray the nozzle. And by having it at the top, like all of the strawberry juice, and having it in a unique kind of separate compartment, you can smell that strawberry so much when you press and activate the swirl. And that, again, it triggers freshness. It triggers a greater naturality of our product. And it also triggers the brain to think that we're sweeter than we actually are because you're getting that aromatic hit. Yeah. And so you don't need the sugar. You don't need the calories. You're feeling that sweetness, but it's really from the aroma.
That's very interesting. That makes a lot of sense. What other research or learnings that you've taken from your PhD in food science that you've applied to this business beyond this? I mean, now I'm looking out for it. I'm gonna go get a can and really study it.
You know, I think that in a career, you know, you are put in all of these situations and, you know, throughout your career, throughout your education, and you don't always know why they're applicable. Like, sometimes it feels like such a chore. Why am I doing this? Like, what is this about? But every single lesson that I've learned throughout my education and also through my incredible career education has come into play as a business owner in this industry. So, and also all of the people who, like, enriched my life have come back and helped us in some fashion. So whether that's making sure our product is safe, you know, from microorganisms, like, you're always hearing about, like, you know, this company is doing a recall, or, you know, this thing is growing in the product. Be careful. We went back to Cornell, which is where I did my undergraduate, and they helped us make sure that our product was going to be safe. And they check in with us constantly. So I feel like I'm back at school because my old professors are, like, texting me now, like, is everything going well? Do you need anything? So I sat in, you know, as a kid, like, with Petri dishes and doing all kinds of microorganism, you know, studies and cultures. And I never understood why I was learning about all of these versions of E. coli or Salmonella, but, like, all of that has come into play. Or whether that's, you know, all of the marketing and consumer insights, knowledge and strategy work that I was lucky to sit in on in my companies. So everything, I would say everything has come back full circle in an unexpected way and touched our product in some fashion.
I love that. I love that you're taking every single bits and pieces you've learned, even from starting in the lab at school to your pirate companies, it all comes back. And I do agree with that. Like, you know, looking back at the last decades, every success, every failure, mostly the failures that gave me the biggest lessons, usually the hard times that makes me remember the lessons from it too. And, you know, it's incredible that you're still staying in touch with your professor, because I honestly do not remember who my classmates are or my professors.
No, they all haunt me and my phone. But also, like, there's bosses I've had who've been incredibly influential, and who, when I was in development on the product, like, I remember there was this one boss that I had at PepsiCo that was just the most brilliant, incredible woman ever. And I showed her an early prototype of our graphics. And she was like, "Tracy, I love this idea, but that's not going to be your packaging. But I still think this is adorable, but like, keep working on it. But you need more swirls, because that's your point of difference. So don't forget that." And I couldn't believe that she, like, you know, not only like kind of dismissed the packaging, but for all the right reasons, but so nonchalantly, like, "That's not going to be your thing." And then ultimately we rose to that occasion, like, kept her words echoed in my head over and over again. We upgraded our name for our brand based on that. And we changed all of our packaging design, but it came so much more easily after she said the obvious to us, just as she always did throughout my career, where she would say, "That's a great idea, but that's not the one you're going to go with, but keep working on it."
What was her original name?
Oh my God, we had so many names. We were Whip and Whimsy for a minute. We were Cream and Co. for a minute. We were Swirl City. That didn't last very long. The name that I always wanted, but that was way too long to fit on a can, was Whippopotamus. Maybe one day for the kids. Whippopotamus. But yeah, just after, you know, realizing the power of the swirl, kind of Whipnotic was born. And then the graphics came very easily after that.
Is Nautic coming from robotic, or what's the...
From hypnotic, from the circles of hypnosis.
Makes perfect sense. English is not my first language, so that took me a while to get.
It's okay. It's all right. It wanted to be, Jason. It can be.
It whatever. Sounds so futuristic to me. I was like, yeah, this is a future. Nautics. Going back to the people in your life who's been influential, you work with your sister.
Yes.
And, you know, working with a co-founder can be challenging as is, but what's like working with a family member? And you guys have very different skill sets, backgrounds. You know, I'm not sure how you guys work together, but you obviously are running a very successful business together. What's the secret to that?
Well, my sister is my best friend. I have a big family. I come from 6 siblings, and we're all like incredibly close. My sister just has all the skills that I don't. And I think vice versa. We're just very complementary skills. I trust her more than anyone on the planet. So if she says, you know, "Hey, I believe we need to make a left turn here," like, I will follow her off the cliff to the left. In a meeting, I don't need to really speak words with her. If we're being asked by a retailer if we're willing to do something, I could just look at her face and know whether we're willing to do it or not from her side. And I can answer with confidence without even having to pre-discuss it with her. And honestly, yeah, like, I think she's brilliant. And in the moments that are the hardest, like, who better to laugh with or to cry with about these situations than your best friends? So I really love that. I do think, you know, if we reach, you know, some sort of incredible success, it will be mainly because of the dynamic of being in a sibling co-foundership, where really you want to work hard to and never give up, because, you know, you want to do well for the other one.
Yeah. And I love that. I'm sure she does the same and feel the same for you too. And that bond is unbreakable. It's so hard to find a co-founder that believes in you as much as they believe in themselves and wants the best for you. It's really hard because a lot of co-foundership comes from, you know, friends, roommates, classmates, or just randomly in a networking event. So the fact that you guys are able to start as family and have that strong bond before you start the business and have that trust towards each other, which I think like trust is one of the biggest key things between a successful partnership or not. And a lot of people just don't have that level of trust that siblings do, right?
Yeah.
And I love that.
So. I think so. But also, like, I know all her strengths. I know all of her, you know, all of her opportunity areas. She knows the same with me. And so we complement each other well. I would absolutely innovate forever and be creative and come up with a million ideas, but have no foundation for how much they would cost or like whether they make good financial sense. And so I would get myself into a ton of trouble without her, and she would pinch every penny and keep, you know, the books perfectly clean, but never make, you know, the technology updates or create new things and push the boundaries. So you need both, and you need a good balance of both, and you need to respect the other one when they say like, this is where my comfort zone is. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's it. It works really, really well for us.
I agree. Between me and my partner, I'm the crazy one who thinks, oh, yeah, let's just do that. And then my partner will be, no, that costs a bajillion dollars. But I think you need that push and pull, because otherwise you're either going to be too stagnant or you're going to be bankrupt. And I think us two together, and it looks like you and Lori together, is a really good balance of those.
Exactly.
And I wanted to go over a little bit on the social media strategy, especially because you guys came from a COVID era startup. With everything being on TikTok, on Instagram, how did that shape the way that you built the company and the way that you market the company? Do you think that was a big impact and made you be more creative?
I think that social media has always been something that has helped me to figure out like what the trends are and where pop culture is headed. And I love that about social media. Obviously, there's a lot of downsides, but I absolutely have always been fascinated by culture. And so I am a junkie for TikTok. I am a junkie for Instagram. I love seeing what people are talking about, how they're talking about it. And so I don't think it shaped kind of how like a strategy of some sort. I think it all just came very organically of, you know, what are people talking about? How can we involve ourselves where appropriate in the conversation? How can we take from the conversation and build upon it and add new flavors or add new features in order to play into what's already happening? I would say that's really where we've, you know, done well. I think the other thing is we've made a lot of brand friends that way, who we've been able to partner with for giveaways and for other kind of things, other types of collaborations. And that's been very helpful too, is like you not only meet your customers that way, but you meet your best brand friends that way too.
And so many resources you can share between all your brand friends. Love that. And your product is just so prime for TikTok. Like, as much as you didn't intend to design it around the platform, it was just perfect for it. Because yeah. I think just like pushing the nozzle and having the sound of the whipped cream coming out and seeing it come out and the color of it coming out, it just hits all the check boxes for how a product can go viral on TikTok. So as much as you didn't design for it, it just naturally happened to be such a good product for TikTok, and it's perfect for all ages, all demo. I think you guys just had the right formula in the right time, right platform, and it all worked out. Was there a flavor idea that you love but had to kill for some reason?
Nothing ever dies, Jason. It just needs to find its right moment.
Reinvents itself.
Yeah, it needs its right moment. So I think, you know, we played a lot with pistachio early on. Now Dubai chocolate is a huge phenomenon. So we've brought it back. And we'll be launching that in January. We played with cinnamon very early on, like red hot kind of cinnamon stuff. We kind of held it, played longer, and now have a cinnamon bun flavor that's coming out in November. Nothing ever dies. Everything comes back around, but we probably have like a flavor list that's a mile long of things that we've played with that we're just waiting for the right moment. And that's really the number one thing that we get on TikTok or we get on Instagram is we get a lot of flavor recommendations from our audience. So that we really appreciate that. And we listen to everyone. And it's always Lori and I who are answering. So
I love that you just get like a free market research pool of people who want this and will buy it. It's honestly, again, the perfect formula. You're in a lot of retail stores for a company that started a couple of years ago. You guys are in a lot of stores across America. What's been the key thing that helped you unlock these nationalized distribution? Were you pitching every single door? Were you going to email them? What was your secret there?
I think trade shows have really helped us. So we launched our product 3 years ago at Fantasy Food Show in New York City at the Javits. And we had intended to only be launching in Citarella, which isn't an only. That was a huge get for us. And that was a cold call to the buyer who was incredibly like open, excited, willing to work with us. But our intention was to launch there. And we thought that was huge. And that was all we were going to do for a little while. But at Fantasy Food Show and with the endorsement of Citarella behind us, we started our growth much faster than anticipated. And then since then, we've attended Expo West and had booths there a few years. And I think, you know, for a retailer, once they see and they experience a product, they get the point of difference really quickly. And that's really been our key to success is that our point of difference is very visual. And so I think it just makes sense to a customer very quickly. And since we are unique, we are patent protected. We've patented our technology. So we are the only one in town that can do that. Right. It really helps also for them to see, you know, how we would be complementary on their shelf.
Love that. And my last question to you is, I've seen a bunch of your videos before this show. I see people put it on coffee, cocktails, desserts. What's the wildest place you see people put whipped cream that you didn't think it would work, but it worked?
Oh my goodness. Well, we have a social media manager named Ella, who at every single one of our trade shows, she'll go booth to booth and try whipped cream with whatever their food is. And everything from shrimp to pickles to
which one worked?
It works on everything. It really does. I think we love to say we're the best friend to all food. And we don't judge, you know, we get asked to pour it directly into people's mouths. We hear about all sorts of places where our whipped cream has gone that we did not expect. But I suppose with this type of food, it can be very daytime or it can be very X-rated. And we learn about all of it from our customers. But we really pair very nicely with lots of different foods. I would say like Asian food is something that I never
really didn't expect that.
Mm-hmm. But there's like whether there's like Indian lassis or whether there's, you know, soy that can go really well with a nice cream or a dairy. We pair really well with spicy and Asian kind of inspired flavor. So we have a lot of friends in that space who are anxious for us to create something a little savory as well to pair. So over time, let's see.
I have a friend who runs a chili crisps company called Fly By Jing.
Oh, of course.
And I would just think that you guys would pair well together too. She just launched a ketchup collab with a ketchup brand, Chili Crisps.
I've seen it. Yeah.
And I can think, ooh, whipped cream and chili crisps could be another one. Because one of the things that she did when she was advertising the brand early on was to put it on ice cream. And I was like, what the heck? Putting chili crisps on ice cream? That doesn't make sense. it makes total sense.
It makes total sense. We've done it also. So yeah, I think there is something really beautiful about spicy and then cutting the spice with the fat of the cream, but without too much calorie. It's a delicious pairing, an unexpected pairing.
I'm so excited to try. Were you at Expo West this last year?
We were there. We went as exhibitors. We didn't have a booth. We went as visitors. We didn't exhibit this year. But we did the couple years before, and we will next year.
I'm excited to see you at Expo X next year.
Yeah.
To end out the show, tell our listeners where we can find you and any upcoming store rollouts that you're excited about.
Sure. So we're if you come to whipnotic.com, we have a store locator where you can put in your zip code and find us at any of our stores near you. We also have a coupon for $1.50 off that you can print off and bring with you, so you can get a nice trial for a lower price point. Coming up next, our next customer that we're onboarding in October is Whole Foods.
Wow.
Really excited about that too. That's going to be in the Northeast. So we're going to be in the Northeast region of Whole Foods starting October.
Congratulations, Tracy.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been a very inspirational story. I love learning about the little tips and tricks that you had on product development, on working with family, on growing on social media. And once again, I just said you guys have the perfect formula for a successful business. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
And I appreciate it. It was fun.
All right.